Chapter 18, The Age of Crusades, A Command from the Pope. In the last chapter, we traveled from England all the way east to Japan. Now let's call your flying carpet to take you back. Do you remember flying all around the Roman Empire back when we first started to read about the Middle Ages? Your flying carpet took you far, far up above the Mediterranean Sea and hovered there so that you could look down. You could see the land all around the Mediterranean Sea, and the land all the way down into Egypt and up into Britain glowing yellow. All through this Roman territory, people spoke Latin and followed the Roman laws. Now hop back on your flying carpet and soar up, up above China. If you glance down now, you might see the Great Wall snaking across China's mountains. Your carpet whisks you across Asia, then turns south so that you fly down over India and across the Indian Ocean, and then turns north again. You peer over the edge of the carpet. Below you, you can see the Arabian Peninsula, with the Red Sea on one side of it and the Persian Gulf on the other. The Mediterranean Sea is just ahead. But something has happened to the land around the Mediterranean. It isn't glowing yellow anymore. Instead, it shines with a deep, clear scarlet. The entire Arabian Peninsula is scarlet. So is the whole northern coast of Africa. Spain is scarlet, although the scarlet line stops at Tours, where Charles the Hammer stopped the Muslim army and turned it back. But the scarlet stretches up from Arabia all the way over to Jerusalem, on the coast of the Mediterranean. It stretches up to the Caspian Sea and over into India. This is the land that belongs to the Islamic Empire, now bigger than Rome's empire ever was. The Muslim warriors who fought to spread the Islamic Empire had one great desire, to spread Islam across the civilized world. And this frightened the other nations in the medieval world. Their kings were afraid that Muslim rulers would take control of their cities. And the leaders of medieval Christianity were worried as well. If Islam spread all across the world, what would happen to Christianity? Christians were particularly upset when the rulers of the Islamic Empire made it hard for them to visit the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was a holy city for Muslims because they believed that Muhammad had ascended to heaven from a great rock inside the city. But Jerusalem was also a holy city for Jews because it was the city of David, the great Hebrew king, and because the ruins of the temple destroyed by the Romans were there. And it was holy for Christians because Jesus was crucified there. Many Jewish and Christian believers made special journeys to Jerusalem. These travelers were called pilgrims, people who made trips to show their devotion to God and sometimes to ask forgiveness for their sins. When the Islamic Empire first took control of Jerusalem, Jews and Christians were allowed to visit the city. But then the Muslims in Jerusalem began to turn against Jewish and Christian pilgrims. Muslims started to attack and rob Christian and Jewish pilgrims. Some were even killed. Eventually, the roads to Jerusalem were blocked to Christians and Jews so that pilgrims couldn't go to the holy city anymore. And the Islamic Empire itself was creeping closer and closer to Constantinople and the Christian churches there. Finally, the Byzantine emperor, who lived in Constantinople, sent a message to the Pope. "We need help here in Constantinople," he begged. "Surely knights from the other Christian kingdoms can help to protect the city of Constantinople from the Muslim conquest. If we are conquered, no Christian will be able to worship at the great cathedral, the Hagia Sophia, again." The Pope thought about this request. He decided that knights from the Christian kingdoms did need to fight against the spread of Islam. But instead of sending them to Constantinople, he sent them to Jerusalem. He promised knights that they would get rewards in heaven for driving back the Islamic invasion. And he even promised them that anyone who joined the army would have their sins forgiven. "Arm for the rescue of Jerusalem under your captain Christ," he exhorted the knights. "Wear his cross as your badge." So knights from England, France, Italy, and other countries with Christian kings set off for Jerusalem. They sewed crosses on their clothing to show that they belonged to the armies fighting for the holy city. The Latin word for cross is crux, So these warriors attacking Jerusalem became known as Crusaders, and their attempts to recapture Jerusalem from the Islamic Empire became known as the Crusades. The Crusaders who went out to fight the Islamic Empire were determined to defeat the warriors of Islam. But the Crusades went on for years and years, and the Crusaders spent a long time living in Arab countries. And although they thought of Arab warriors as their enemies, they still learned some of the Arab customs. For one thing, they started to take baths more frequently. The Muslim warriors washed often because they had to bathe before their daily prayers. But in England and France, people only took baths once or twice a year. So when the Crusaders came home clean, they were suspected of having become Muslims. Have you ever heard the saying, cleanliness is next to godliness? Well, during the Crusades, dirtiness could prove that you were still a good Christian. Recapturing Jerusalem. When the Pope called all Christian knights to recapture Jerusalem, nobles and knights from many different countries started to organize themselves into an army. But the first Crusaders to set out on a crusade didn't even own swords. They were farmers and peasants who went on the People's Crusade. The People's Crusade began when a wandering preacher named Peter the Hermit decided that common people should join in the effort to recapture Jerusalem. He went through the countryside making loud, excited speeches to all of the peasants and farmers he met. "Come with me to Jerusalem," he would shout. "God will forgive your sins and give you the strength to fight. You too can be a warrior for God." Peter the Hermit wasn't very well liked by other churchmen. A priest called Abbot Quibert remarked, "With his long face framed in a dirty old hood, he looked remarkably like the donkey he rode." But Peter the Hermit was a very persuasive speaker. The people he spoke to believed he had been appointed by God, and he became so popular that people would crowd around him wherever he went, pulling hairs out of his donkey's mane and tail to keep for souvenirs. When Peter the Hermit set out for Constantinople, his first stop on the journey to Jerusalem, 40,000 common people followed him. None of them knew how to fight. A few had axes, but many had no weapons at all, and they didn't know exactly who they were fighting. On their long journey, they attacked Christian villages, stole food, and mistreated the people of the countries they went through. Most of them never even reached Constantinople, and the ones who did were quickly captured and made into slaves. This crusade, the People's Crusade, was a disaster. Meanwhile, real knights had collected a fleet of ships so that they could sail to Constantinople. Once they arrived in Constantinople, they set off on the long march to Jerusalem. We call this first attack on Jerusalem the First Crusade. It took 2 years for the Crusaders to march from Constantinople to Jerusalem. The entire way, the Crusaders were trailed by Muslim fighters. They called these enemies Saracens. The Saracens set up ambushes for the Crusaders. They went ahead of the Crusaders, burning fruit trees and putting poison in the wells. The Crusaders had a hard time fighting off these sneak attacks, and many of the knights were killed on the journey. But finally, the Crusaders arrived at Jerusalem. A medieval historian tells us that the army wept for joy when the knights finally saw Jerusalem's walls. But those walls were thick and lined with Saracen warriors, and a deep moat surrounded the city. How could the Crusaders break into Jerusalem? The best way would be to build tall wooden towers called siege engines, which they could roll over to the walls and use to climb over into the city. But the sandy, rocky hills around Jerusalem had few tall trees, certainly not enough to provide lumber for siege towers. The Crusaders tried to use battering rams against the walls, but the Saracens threw bales of straw over to keep the rams from hitting the stone. The Crusaders set fire to the straw, but this didn't even scorch the walls, and soon the Crusader army began to suffer from hunger and thirst. The Saracens had prepared for their arrival by bringing all the food inside the city and poisoning all the water outside the city walls. Without siege engines, the Crusaders would never be able to take the city. Finally, merchants who were bringing goods to the ports of Italy broke up their ships and carried the wood across the land to the Crusaders. The knights used this wood to build two enormous wooden towers on wooden wheels. They covered these siege engines with animal skins soaked in water so that the Saracen defenders wouldn't be able to shoot flaming arrows into the towers and set them on fire. Then the Crusaders brought stones one by one and threw them into the moat around Jerusalem. Finally, the moat was filled. The knights rolled the siege towers across the stones, climbed up them, and fought their way across the walls. Several of them climbed down the inside of the walls and ran to open the city gates. As soon as the gates were open, the whole Crusader army poured into the city. They were hungry, thirsty, exhausted, and angry. And once they were inside Jerusalem, they killed everyone they could find. Thousands of Muslims and Jews died. Many of them weren't soldiers and didn't even have swords. It had taken 3 years for the First Crusade to recapture Jerusalem. Once the Holy City was in the hands of the Crusaders, they went on to capture the land around Jerusalem, too. They divided this land into little kingdoms. Crusader knights became princes of these new little kingdoms. They tried to live in peace with the Saracens. Saracens who swore allegiance to the Crusader princes were given land and wealth. The Crusaders learned to dress and act more like Muslims. Some Crusaders even married Saracen women. But even though Saracens and Crusaders lived without fighting for a little while, they were never truly at peace. Most Crusaders never forgot that the Pope had called the Muslims enemies of the true faith, and the Muslims were never able to forget the cruelty that the Crusaders had shown at the capture of Jerusalem. Saladin of Jerusalem. Now Jerusalem was in the hands of the Crusaders. The land all around the Holy City was ruled by Crusader princes. But the Saracens wanted Jerusalem back. They organized themselves into an army, attacked one of the little kingdoms near Jerusalem, and defeated its Crusader prince. When news of this revolt reached England, France, and the other Christian countries, a new army of knights set out to fight the Saracens. We call this the Second Crusade. But the Second Crusade failed. The Crusader army couldn't retake that rebellious little kingdom. It remained in Muslim hands. The Crusader army fell apart, and the knights crept back home ashamed of their failure. And the Saracens, under the great warrior Saladin, began to prepare for an even greater attack on Jerusalem itself. When Saladin was born, Jerusalem had been in the hands of the Crusaders for almost 40 years, and Saladin was just as anxious to win the city back for Islam as the Crusaders had been to conquer it for Christianity. From childhood on, he prepared himself to be a warrior. He spent years learning how to follow the Quran and training himself to fight. As a young man, he fought in the army commanded by his uncle. More and more Muslims noticed Saladin and praised his bravery. Finally, Saladin became the second in command, or vizier, over all the Muslims in Egypt. Now he had his own army, and he was determined to bring all the Muslims together into one powerful army with one goal: to retake the city of Jerusalem. But before he could do this, Saladin had to convince the Muslim warriors to follow him rather than any other Muslim leader. So he was careful to be a model Muslim. He never broke his word. He always prayed 5 times a day, even when he was traveling or fighting. He gave so many alms to the poor that his treasury was almost empty. He gained a reputation for justice and fairness. Saladin became more and more popular. At last, he had gathered a huge and faithful army around him. He was ready to march towards Jerusalem. When the English ruler of Jerusalem, King Guy, heard that Saladin's army was approaching, he called all of his knights together to ask them for advice. "Saladin is marching towards us with a huge force of Saracens behind him," he said. "What should we do? Stay here in the city or go out to meet him?" The oldest and strongest knight said, "We should stay here and defend the city. It's too hot to march out across the plains. If we stay here, Saladin's armies will have to tire themselves out coming to us. And do you remember how hard it was for us to conquer the city as long as the Saracens stayed inside it?" But another knight disagreed. "We should go out and meet this army," he shouted. "Staying here is cowardice. Let's be courageous and attack Saladin first. King Guy didn't know what to do, but he was afraid that the oldest and strongest knight was out to take the throne of Jerusalem away from him. So he decided to follow the second knight's advice instead. He collected all of his men together and marched out to meet Saladin and his army. That was a terrible mistake. The summer day was the hottest of the year. The sun poured down on the crusaders. Their heavy steel armor heated up like frying pans on a stove. The rocks were too hot to touch. Dust choked the horses and made the men cough. They grew so weary and thirsty that King Guy ordered them to stop in the middle of the afternoon and set up camp near a well. So the crusaders unloaded their horses, set up their tents, and hurried to draw water from the well. The well was dry. By now the crusaders were sick from thirst, and even worse, they were down in a valley between two mountain peaks called the Horns of Hattin. An enemy army could hide behind the trees and rocks above the valley and shoot arrows down on them. But King Guy's army was too exhausted to move. They lay in their tents in the heat, barely able to reach for their weapons. Sure enough, Saladin's army surrounded the valley. The Saracens set fire to the brush and trees around the valley's edge so that the Crusader army couldn't escape. But the Crusaders were so weak they didn't put up much of a fight. They were defeated, and King Guy surrendered. Now Jerusalem was undefended. So Saladin led his army into the city in a triumphant parade. Saladin told his men not to kill the Christians in Jerusalem. Instead, he took them captive and sold them as slaves. But he allowed the weak and the elderly to go free. And after he declared himself the ruler of Jerusalem, he announced that Jewish and Christian pilgrims would be allowed to enter the city in peace. For 90 years, Jerusalem had been under Christian rule. Now it was in Muslim hands once again. A third crusade was launched to get Jerusalem back, but Saladin could not be defeated. After this, there were five more crusades. Each of the crusades tried to take part of the Islamic Empire away from the Muslims, but none of the crusades were very successful. Crusades weren't a very good way to win land back from the Islamic Empire. El Cid and the Reconquest of Spain. The most successful attack against the Islamic Empire wasn't a crusade and didn't take place in Jerusalem. Muslim armies kept control of Jerusalem, but over in Spain, Christian kingdoms pushed the Muslim rulers out. We call this time the Reconquest of Spain. Do you remember learning about the Muslim invasion of Spain? 400 years before the Crusades, the Visigoths, who lived in Spain, had invited the Muslim warrior Tariq bin Ziyad to come in and help them settle a fight over the Spanish throne. Tariq came with an army, and he took Spain for Islam. The Arabs lived in Spain for centuries. They became known as Moors, and their kingdom was called Al-Andalus. The Spanish language became full of Arabic words. Beautiful mosques were built in Spain. Moorish artists, musicians, poets, and philosophers became famous all through the world. Only a few small kingdoms in the north of Spain remained under the rule of Christian kings. For many years, the Muslim rulers of Al-Andalus were tolerant. They allowed Jews and Christians to live in Spain in peace. But 100 years before the Crusades began, a new Muslim king came to the throne of Al-Andalus, a king who was only 12. This young king didn't really know how to rule a country, so he left most of his decisions to his tutor. This tutor, Al-Mansur, became the king's vizier, his second in command. Al-Mansur didn't want Christians or Jews in Spain. He made new laws that kept Christians from meeting and worshiping together, and he declared that Christians and Jews would have to pay higher taxes than Muslims. So many Christians left Al-Andalus and traveled up to the north of Spain, to the Christian kingdoms where they would not have to worry about persecution. Now all the Christians in Spain were gathered together in one place, and they began to think about fighting back against the Muslim kingdom of Al-Andalus. They started to venture out from the north and attack Muslim cities. One by one, these cities began to fall to the Christian armies. One Christian fighter, Rodrigo Diaz de Vivar, became the greatest hero of the Reconquest. So many stories are told about him that we cannot be sure which are true and which are legends. But here is one account of Rodrigo's life. During the Reconquest, the Christian Kingdom of Castile in the north of Spain hired the young warrior Rodrigo to lead its armies. Rodrigo fought so bravely that the King of Castile, Alfonso, grew jealous of him and banished him from Castile. Rodrigo knew that he had done nothing wrong. He swore that he would not shave or trim his beard until he was pardoned. And so his beard grew for years and years. It became so long that Rodrigo braided it and tied it into a knot so that no one could grab it and pull him down in battle. When Rodrigo left Castile, he traveled around Spain fighting for whoever would hire him. He led Christian armies into battle against the Moors, and the Moors into battle against the Christians. Both sides grew to respect his strength. They called him simply El Cid. This means the Lord, or the boss. El Cid eventually settled down in a small castle in the east of Spain, but he wouldn't be allowed to rest for long. Alfonso's kingdom, Castile, was growing more and more powerful, capturing more and more Muslim cities, and the Islamic rulers of Spain were afraid that they would not be able to fight the Christians off. So they sent a message to the Muslims of North Africa asking for help. A huge army of Muslim warriors poured across the Strait of Gibraltar into Spain. They defeated the Castilian army and began to drive the Christians back into the north. The Christian attempt to reconquer Spain seemed doomed. King Alfonso realized that he needed his strongest general to come help him. So he sent messengers to El Cid, begging the great warrior to fight against these invading armies. "Help us to fight against the Islamic forces," the king pleaded. "They have driven the Christians out of the city of Valencia and have filled it with Muslim warriors. If we cannot retake these cities, we are doomed." The city of Valencia was near El Cid's castle, so he chose 4,000 fighters and led them out to attack the city. He rode ahead of them, his braided beard tucked carefully into his helmet, his armor gilded with gold and silver, and a scarlet dragon on his shield. The Muslim army in Valencia was much larger than El Cid's small force. But El Cid chose his battlefield carefully. It was a small field surrounded by trees and rocks, with a narrow entrance, and only a small part of the Muslim army could get into it at a time. Little by little, El Cid and his army defeated the forces of Valencia. El Cid claimed the city for his own and turned its mosque into a Christian church. El Cid's triumph was not the last Christian victory. The tide of the war had turned against the Moorish forces. The Christian armies called the Crusaders to come and help them drive the Moors from Spain. Eventually, 5 Christian kingdoms covered most of Spain. Only a small kingdom far to the south, Granada, remained in Muslim hands. Spain had been reconquered.